Name something that gets passed around.
A joint.
A joint.
Legalized marijuana is always a very difficult question.
The time is long overdue for us to remove the federal prohibition on marijuana.
From now on, I smoke weed exclusively with white people.
Well, I'm getting higher next time.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man, the Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
There's definitely cannabis in there, and it makes sure that I can sleep now.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Don't piss off your old dealer.
Marijuana is not the kind of thing that ought to be legalized.
I know you're not supposed to admit that you smoke pot, but I don't drink alcohol.
Let's get out of here. I have some really good weed back at the hotel.
I used to smoke marijuana.
I don't care if an adult wants to smoke marijuana. They shouldn't go to prison for it either.
All right, all right, all right. Welcome back, everybody. Time for Toker Talk Radio. Glad to have you here, and welcome to all the new viewers that showed up in the chat room. Glad to see you. I'm now a registered medical marijuana caregiver. That's good news. Just got my card. There we go. And you might be wondering, like, Russ, isn't marijuana legal in Oregon? What do you need to be a medical marijuana caregiver for? Well, folks, if you've been following the news, you might recognize that recreational marijuana ain't so safe these days. There might be some crackdowns coming, and if the federal government is going to decide that medical marijuana is okay, but recreational marijuana ain't, then I'm going to get me a medical marijuana card. And so are a whole bunch of other people out there. Furthermore, in the system that we have right now, the recreational system, the testing regulations and the prices and everything has become pretty damn onerous. A lot of people who were really excited about getting into the medical marijuana or the recreational marijuana movement there are now rethinking that and moving themselves back to the medical side of things just because of all of these overbearing regulations. So it's something we'll be keeping an eye on, but I am now once again protected under the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act. This is good news, too, because it also increases possession amounts that we can maintain and the number of plants that we can grow. So there we go. I am now a caregiver. Who am I caring for? Oh, there we go. Okay. See what a strictly regulated program we got here. Anyway, I wanted to tell you a few stories here in hour two as we wind up this week that has been, since yesterday, just a whirlwind with everybody reacting to the news of Sean Spicer and the administration seeming to signal that recreational marijuana is in its crosshairs. And I've been going rounds on this a lot with people over the past couple of days, and specifically with my I told you so attitude, which was I told you should have voted for Hillary Clinton so that we could stop Donald Trump. And I got people that are clinging so desperately to that life raft of, oh, she'd have been so much worse. She was the terrible candidate. She's the one to blame for her loss. She did all these terrible things and she was awful. Which is all probably true, right? She was a terrible candidate. I was against her from the beginning. I was a big Bernie Sanders supporter. But it came to a point where I recognized that one of two people would be president. You know it. I know it. They knew it. Gary Johnson and Jill Stein knew it. Everybody on planet Earth knew only one of two people would be president. That person would either be Hillary Clinton or it would be Donald Trump. And you can try to deny your responsibility for this happening. You can try to deflect and say, oh, I don't vote for the lesser of two evils. You can try and say American democracy means that we have more choices, third parties, yada, 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 yada. And it's all pissing in the wind, folks. All pissing in the wind. If you wanted marijuana to remain legal, if you wanted the Obama administration's edicts on non-interference in the recreational marijuana states, and you wanted to see that continue, you had a moral obligation to vote for Hillary Clinton, despite all the other shitty reasons to vote against her. And believe me, I could list 25 off the top of my head. But you can't come here into this marijuana forum and tell me that marijuana would have been worse off under Hillary Clinton. Now, separating all other issues, okay, we're playing just this real narrow focus here. Would marijuana be better off under Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton? And if you think you can make the argument that marijuana would have been worse off under Hillary Clinton, please give me a call. 650-LEGAL-MJ is the phone number. Put it up there in the corner. 650-LEGAL-MJ. If you think Hillary would have been better or would have been worse on marijuana than what we're seeing out of the Trump administration, please make the case. But don't call up and make the case, oh, well, if Hillary was elected, we'd have been in a nuclear war by now. That we're not talking about foreign policy. We're not talking about military policy. We're not talking about healthcare policy. We're not talking about immigration policy. Marijuana policy. Convince me Hillary would have been worse than Donald Trump. You can't do it. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I got this crazy story to tell you out of Montana. Normally, the Republicans are pretty sneaky and very, very able to hide what their intents are. This story out of Montana shows them being actually quite candid about being slippery bastards. We'll return in a second.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
In the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Russ Belville Show presents the anti-drug public service announcement of the day.
Hey, yo, get off my car!
Let me get that money, man.
What
are you doing? Gotcha. Give him the stuff. Yo, what are you doing?
Good evening. Just pretend I'm not here.
Yo, can I help you?
Are you selling drugs?
There's a better way to find information about drugs, so you can talk to your kids. Get the tools at drugfree.org from the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
This has been the Russ Belville Show's anti-drug public service announcement of the day, exclusively on RadicalRuss.com.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
A substance that half Americans think should be legal and more than two-thirds say the states should be free to regulate.
You can find Radical Russ online everywhere.
It's time for Cannabis Facts about teen drug use from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. This message is supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. A recent survey by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control indicates that in states that have legalized medical marijuana, the rate of marijuana consumption among high school students has not increased. In fact, in legal states like Colorado, teen use has actually decreased significantly. It's simply no longer a big deal for teenagers in legal states. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com.
Warning, hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that. This is Dan Michaels from danmichaelsaudio.com. And you're listening to Radical Russ on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everybody. 10 after the hour. And for this segment, we're going to tell you a story coming out of the state of Montana. I mean, if you've been following over the past couple of years, maybe the 3 or 4 years, throughout the country, there have been all these states that are implementing measures to make it harder for people to vote. The Voting Rights Act, of course, protected a lot of these people in the southern states, the former Confederate states that had been guilty of poll taxes and other Jim Crow era restrictions on the voting franchise. But the Congress decided and the Supreme Court agreed that we didn't need to have the Voting Rights Act anymore because the Voting Rights Act fixed those problems. It's kind of like saying, because you went out in the rain in an umbrella and didn't get wet, you don't need an umbrella anymore. So by restricting or eliminating measures such as early voting or mail-in voting, the Republicans and folks, it's always Republicans who are in control of the state legislatures, seek to suppress votes for their Democratic opposition. Because early voting and mail-in voting are generally used by the poor and working class and minorities who more likely vote blue than red. However, GOP officials are rarely open in admitting this. Usually they'll couch it in some phantasms of voter fraud. Oh my God, there's people illegally voting, which have never been proven, never been shown to be any significant problem. But this time in Montana, they came right out and expressed why they wanted to suppress the vote. Montana's representative, Jeff Essman, state representative, he's the chair of the state's Republican Party. And he sent a letter out warning about a recent bill because one of the Montana U.S. representatives was tapped by Donald Trump to become the new Interior Secretary. So they have to have a special election to replace that seat, to fill that seat. So some Republicans are proposing for this special election and for elections moving forward that they adopt the vote-by-mail system that we use here in Oregon and that is also in use in Washington and Colorado. Their point is that they're having an election for just one seat, and it would be a big waste of money to have everyone go to the polls and have the polling people work there and account, you know, all the stuff involved there. Just go to vote by mail, save ourselves a lot of money, save the taxpayers a lot of money. But Representative Essman sent a letter out warning that if that vote by mail for special election bill is passed, it would threaten the GOP's power in the state. That's right. He came right out and said it, that we're trying to suppress the vote so we can stay in power. Here's from the letter. I'll read you right from the letter. Quote, all mail ballots give the Democrats an inherent advantage in close elections due to their ability to organize large numbers of unpaid college students and members of public employee unions to gather ballots by going door to door. Just wrap your mind around that. This is a guy complaining about citizens for no pay, unpaid college students and members of public employee unions, citizens volunteering their time to increase participation in the vote. They don't like that because those people vote Democratic. The letter continues, quote, vote by mail is designed to increase participation rates of lower propensity voters. Democrats in Montana perform better than Republican candidates among lower propensity voters, and Republican candidates do better among higher propensity voters. What does that term mean, low and high propensity voters? Well, a high propensity voter is one who votes often in every election because they're middle class or rich enough to be able to take time off work on a Tuesday and head down and stand in a line for an hour or two and vote, or not even have to stand in a line because they live in a rich district that has lots of polling machines and a well-staffed poll. Meanwhile, the low-propensity voters are, you know, the working class and the poor who have jobs to go to on a Tuesday that can't take time off to stand in a line, a line that's usually much longer in their districts because the Republicans underfund and understaff the voting locations there. So again, he's rejecting vote by mail because it would increase participation. We got to reject vote by mail because it would hurt Republicans, because if more people vote, Republicans lose. He's coming right out and saying it, folks. Let me continue. He quotes in the letter. I know that my position will not be popular with many fiscally conservative Republican county commissioners or the sponsor of House Bill 305. They may be well intended, but this bill could be the death of our effort to make Montana a reliably Republican state. It is my job to remind us all of the long-term strategic advantage that passage of this bill would provide to our Democrat opponents for control of our legislature and our statewide elected positions. Make Montana a reliably Republican state. If we let more people vote, we can't establish one-party rule. That's what the guy's saying. And God forbid the Republicans might, change their policies, listen to their voters, come up with policies and ideas that are supported by more voters. Nah, let's just keep the voters we don't like from voting. That's a lot easier. And it's not just that when more voters participate in the elections, the Democrats tend to do better. It's that greater exercise of citizen democracy might lead them to legalize the devil's lettuce. I'm not kidding. According to Montana's Secretary of State, Corey Stapleton, quote, "If you look at the three states that have done it, you can see that populism and direct democracy at its best, all three states, Oregon, Washington, and Colorado, they do all mail-in ballots, and they're all marijuana all the time states, too. Is that what you want? Because that's what you're going to get." End quote. All marijuana all the time. Yeah, that's right. We're all marijuana all the time. That's all we do in Oregon. We just smoke pot. That's it. Grow pot, smoke pot, sell pot. That's all we do. And again, that's something the voters decided on here. 56% of them decided on that. 55% in Washington. 55% in Colorado. Once again, Republicans telling us they don't like democracy. Because, gosh, when people are listened to and have the power to make laws, they make laws you don't like. They make laws they like. What a concept. So, let me think. What else do Oregon, Washington, and Colorado have? Well, three Democratic governors, no Republicans, five Democratic senators, one Republican, 13 Democratic representatives, nine Republicans, minimum wages exceeding the federal minimum wage by $1.75, $2, and $3.75 in Colorado, Oregon, and Washington, respectively, you know, something that helps the working poor. Those three states also have legal physician-assisted suicide that helps the terminally ill. They all accepted Obamacare's Medicaid expansion that helps the non-terminally ill. And they're all have, as in their largest cities, they are all sanctuary cities that protect the families of immigrants. Yeah, wow. Ain't it funny how given the poor and minorities more and easier opportunities to exercise their franchise leads to policies that benefit poor and minorities? Like ending marijuana prohibition that disproportionately impacts the poor and minorities? This is shameful. The Montana Republican Party has no shame. Openly admitting they want to suppress votes. They want to make voting harder. They want to ensure that fewer Democrats vote so they can maintain one-party rule in Montana and they can thwart efforts of citizens to change the law. This should offend you, whether you're Republican, Democrat, Green, Libertarian, hell, Vermin Supreme. You ought to be pissed off about this. Our elected officials openly conspiring and lobbying to restrict the voting franchise, to keep voting as difficult as possible, in a naked attempt to maintain their own power. Now me, I prefer a system where we listen to the people and we try to get as many people to vote as possible. We should be ashamed.
Come out and fight. It is a good day to die.
Ah yes, Chief Dan George. Well, folks, it's 20 after. It's 4:20 here in the Pacific time zone. That means it's time for our union-mandated safety briefing. We wouldn't want OSHA to be pissed off at us, would we? All right, we'll be back in just a moment with more from the world of marijuana here on the Russ Belville Show.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show and 420 Radio.
You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
Americans have increasingly come to the conclusion that the drug war is a failed policy.
You can find Radical Russ online everywhere. Warning. Hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they aim you to say that.
Oh, I could have smoked that pot.
A public service message from the Russ Belville Show.
Most of us pirates, we go on vacation to North Dakota, you know, because they've got a town called Argusville. What are you smoking there, boy?
This is Dan Michaels from danmichaelsaudio.com, and you're listening to Radical Russ on cannabisradio.com.
Welcome back, everybody. It's 22 after the hour, and yep, I'm going back to the subject. I can't let it die. I will not let it die. I got people out there that are like, get over it, Russ. You should get over it. Get over the fact that Hillary lost. Get over it. Folks, I'm not over Ralph Nader. Right? So you can damn well bet that I'm not over Jilly Steinson and the third-party vote tossers that helped Trump to get us into the position where we're at today. And I get all sorts of responses back from people on this. I get the one that, the DNC conspired to fix the primaries and they screwed Bernie. Or the DNC purposefully elevated Donald Trump in the media because they thought he'd be easier for Hillary to beat. Or Hillary lost it because she should have campaigned in Wisconsin and Michigan instead of Georgia and Utah. Or any number of things that WikiLeaks did, or the DNC did, or Russia did, or Hillary did, or didn't do, all these reasons. And I also get the response back that even if every third party voter had voted for Hillary, mathematically she still would have lost. I get it all. I hear it all, folks. But those responses are responses to something I'm not trying to say, a point I'm not trying to make. I'm not trying to make the point that the third-party vote tossers cost Hillary the election. I'm willing to accept that Hillary cost Hillary the election, that Hillary was a shitty candidate who made some colossal mistakes. That's not at issue. I'm not looking at the macro. I'm looking at the micro. I'm looking at you. I'm looking at you and what you did when the shot was there, when the chance was there to stop Trump, and there was only one thing you could have done to stop him. And you know it, and I know it, and they know it. Everyone knows that the only person who would have beaten Donald Trump in the 2016 election is Hillary Clinton. Whether she did or not, whether all the numbers and results that happened flipped to her side would have made a difference, is not the point. The point is, when staring an existential crisis to the United States generally and to marijuana specifically, when staring straight into that possibility, you deferred on doing something to stop it. Period. I have an analogy that I use to try to explain this to people, to try to get through to them that, again, I'm not saying Hillary should have won or would have won, or that you changing your vote would have made a difference. I'm saying, in the heat of battle, what did you do in the fight? Imagine it this way. Imagine that you and I are in a foxhole. We're all alone in a foxhole. We got no support. We got no artillery. We got nothing. It's just you and me and our rifles and our ammo. That's it. We got rifles and ammo, and we're stuck in a foxhole. And oncoming to attack us is the enemy army, and they got tanks, and they got air support, and they got artillery. We are hopelessly outgunned. We have no chance whatsoever. We are going to die. We're going to lose. There's no way we can shoot through the tanks. There's no way we can shoot enough bullets to kill all the enemy soldiers. Our mission is hopeless. We're stuck in the foxhole, and here comes the enemy. Now, me, despite the fact that it's hopeless, despite the fact that there's nothing that can be done to guarantee a good outcome on my side, I'm still going to take my rifle and start firing it at as much of the enemy as I can. I'm going to try to inflict as much damage on the enemy as I can, even knowing that it's futile. And then I turn and look at you. But you're not firing your rifle at them. And I turn and I go, what the hell are you doing? The enemy! The enemy's right in front of us! What the hell's wrong with you? And you turn to me and you say, well, I don't think firing the rifle at the enemy is going to make any difference. They're going to kill us anyway. So instead, I've decided that I'm going to fire my rifle straight up into the air in the hopes that it hits an aircraft passing overhead and disables it. And then that aircraft, when it's disabled, goes into a tail spiral, goes into a death spiral and crashes into the enemy, and then we win. And I turn to you and I say, you know, that's impossible. You know, there's no chance in hell. There's no way that's good. We have a better chance shooting at the tanks than you trying to shoot at an airplane that may or may not be passing overhead and hoping that it crash lands into the enemy. And you say, well, I'm sorry. That's just what I'm going to do. I'm going to do. And then after you've been firing up into the air and I've been firing at the enemy, finally they advance upon us and they capture us. Finally they capture. And I turn to you and I say, while we're sitting in the concentration camp, I turn to you and I say, what the hell were you thinking? We were facing death. And the only reasonable thing we could have done to try to avoid that was to shoot at our enemy. And instead, you picked some harebrained, cockamamie idea that was impossible and could never, ever succeed. You went with that? Is that when you're going to turn to me and say, well, doesn't matter. Even if I'd have fired my bullets at the enemy, they'd have captured us anyway. Because that's what I hear when you tell me this, oh, well, you know, Hillary did this and Hillary did that and the Russians and the leaks and the email servers and blah, 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 blah. Yeah, but I don't care about what the enemy's up to. I don't care about what tanks they may be driving. I care about the fact that you had a gun in your hand and the chance to shoot the enemy and you deferred. You had the chance to commit an act that could have had a chance at succeeding, and instead picked an act that had zero chance of succeeding. That's what I'm upset about. I'm upset about this political naivete that too many people have. This magical thinking that if we all, well, gosh, if everybody voted third party, then Jill Stein would win. Gosh, if we, folks, this is real life. This is people's businesses that they're starting in the cannabis world. This is people's medicine that they depend on to survive. And in the face of that, you'd put your hopes into some Jill Stein puppet tool of the Kremlin, who is, it's becoming pretty clear, was another part of their operation to help erode support on the left. I just don't even know what to say about that anymore. It's just, I really thought after Ralph Nader, this would have been cured. I really thought maybe there's some hope that maybe people would recognize that, look, the system sucks. Two-party politics sucks. I wish we had a parliamentary system and you could vote for the party that perfectly matches your green ideals or your libertarian ideals. But that's not the name of our game. Our game is two-party politics. And oftentimes, the responsibility of the voter in that game is to protect America from the worst evil. These people who say, I won't vote for the lesser of two evils. Okay, then you're acceding to the greater of two evils. You're saying, I'm fine with the greater of two evils if they happen to make it in there because I'm not going to vote one way or the other. I'm not going to pick you. You've just decided that everyone else should decide whether the greater or the lesser evil comes into play into the Oval Office. And this time the greater evil did. This time the greater evil made it to the Oval Office. And this is where the vote tossers say, oh, Hillary, she'd get us into a nuclear war. Oh, Hillary, she's in bed with Goldman Sachs. Look, Hillary get us into a nuclear war when Donald Trump is the one saying he wants to expand the nuclear arsenal and asks, gee, why don't we use our nukes more often? But it's Hillary we're worried about with nuclear war. Oh, Hillary gave speeches to Goldman Sachs while Donald Trump is putting Goldman Sachs, Mnuchin, in charge of the Treasury. And again, if you really think Hillary Clinton would have appointed an attorney general who thought that the KKK was okay until he discovered some of them smoked pot, then please tell me the strain you're smoking because I want a clone of it. Because that's some mighty good shit. Makes you. It's going to be a tough next 4 years, folks. And I would be able to get over this a little bit if the vote tossers would finally admit that Trump is worse than Hillary. I don't even need you to admit that changing your vote would have made a difference. Just admit, now that we've seen Trump in action, he's worse than Hillary. Worse than Hillary could have ever been. Because we can't get to that. If we can't get to recognizing that truism, I don't know how we're going to corroborate on other pieces of our agenda. It's just mind-boggling to me. Just mind. Not to mention, and of course, we're just talking about the weed issue, but my God, the immigration issue, gay and lesbian rights, they've already rolled back the Obama administration's protections for transgender students. They're already rolling back almost every Obama-era initiative and executive order. They're set to repeal Obamacare, although these days, now they're starting to hear from constituents who, gosh, what do you know, kind of like healthcare. They kind of like not being kicked off their insurance for pre-existing conditions. It's the weirdest damn thing. Just so much. And this Russian treachery, this Michael Flynn and the Republican campaign for Trump corroborating and corresponding with the Russians in a direct attempt to subvert our election. You know, this has led to an interesting lawsuit, by the way. I was just reading about this morning. Now, it's a long shot, but these three women from Massachusetts have filed a lawsuit based on the Constitution's guarantee clause. And the guarantee clause is not something that's been adjudicated through the Supreme Court yet. So it opens up some interesting constitutional questions. What the case is in a nutshell, is it the Constitution provides us a guarantee that the nation, our government, is going to protect our nation from foreign invaders. And so this case is this suit is making the case that America was invaded. It's making the case that hacking into the Democratic National Committee, hacking into John Podesta's emails, and hacking into the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee, or Congressional Campaign Committee, constitutes invasion of American cyberspace. And since the government did not live up to guaranteeing us our right to have a government free from foreign intervention, it seeks to invalidate the 2016 election and have a do-over. And it cites cases in other countries where there was serious electoral fraud and such do-overs were done. Again, legal experts say it's a huge long shot. Even whether or not these women have the standing to bring the case has yet to be determined. But I'll keep you posted on how it turns out. All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, more from the world of marijuana here on the Russ Belleville Show.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
Good people don't smoke marijuana.
All right. Well, maybe you're high, too. Warning. Hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
A public service message from the Russ Belville Show. Warning. Hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
A public service message from the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everybody. 38 after the hour here in beautiful legal potland, Oregon. As we're winding things up here for this week, it's been quite an upheaval in the political landscape, although it's not something that I didn't predict. I kind of have been telling everybody that this is on its way. And the reason why is because, well, I've been studying marijuana policy and politics for 12 years straight now. 8 to 10 hours a day, 5 to 6 days a week. This is all I do. Read, write, analyze, research, and smoke weed. And part of that research and part of that background is my friendship with the founder of the National Marijuana Reform Movement, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, Keith Straub. And I've had the opportunity to have some great, long, late-night, wine-fueled, doobie-smoking conversations with the man. And he told me lots of stories about the 70s. We talked a lot about the 70s and how the trajectory of marijuana reform exploded throughout that time. In 1969, the Gallup poll found 12% of the American public supported marijuana legalization. 12%. Keith Straub founded Normal in the late 1970, early 1971. And by 1973, after Straub and former Attorney General Ramsey Clark and others, and also on the heels of the Nixon's Schaefer Commission report recommending nationwide decriminalization, those factors combined to lead my home state of Oregon to become the first to decriminalize personal possession in 1973. Now, from 1973 to 1978, 10 other states followed suit, including such conservative states as Mississippi and Nebraska. It was North Carolina, even, decriminalized marijuana in the 1970s. And the Gallup poll by that time, by the time they get to 1978, the Gallup poll had risen to 36% support. So a tripling of support in just 9 years. And one-fifth of the country, over a fifth of the country decriminalizing in just 5 years. So the folks at Normal and the people involved with marijuana reform by 1978, they are riding high, pardon the pun, and they are thinking and openly proclaiming that, gosh, you know, marijuana legalization is just around the corner. Gosh, it ought to be legalized by 1983 at this pace. Well, we all know what happened is Ronald Reagan got elected. There was the Just Say No era, war on drugs, etc. But also within that was the rise of cocaine. The cocaine party at Normal, the infamous cocaine party at Normal that brought down Peter Bourne, which was Jimmy Carter's drugs advisor at the time, helped to spur this reaction, this blowback against the liberalization of marijuana laws and the acceptance of drug use in general. President Carter started proposing all sorts of new strict laws, and his Justice Department started cracking down on marijuana traffickers, including my friend Bobby Platshorn, who got sent to prison for, at the time, he was sentenced to 64 years in prison. So cocaine had a lot to do with marijuana and the blowback against its legalization. Not just the cocaine party, but also the rise of Studio 54, disco, that whole scene, and this idea that cocaine was just another party drug, just another fun party drug. I have copies of High Times magazine, starting from 1978, running through 83. You can find advertisements for Coke spoons and advertisements for Coke processors and advertisements for Coke vials and centerfolds of cocaine on mirrors. I mean, it was treated very similarly to marijuana in a lot of the public's mind. In fact, when I was at Normal's headquarters in Washington, D.C., they showed me a very rare edition of a Norkel t-shirt. Norkel, the National Organization for the Reform of Cocaine Laws. That was an idea that was actually floated, okay? So you had a drug scare that led to a moral panic because that drug was tied with marijuana, and the parents rebelled against that, and there was a government that was on their side that pushed heavy-duty propaganda and all sorts of strict laws to fight it. So do you see any parallels with today? Because we got a government that hates it. We got another drug that everybody is scared shitless about, opiate addiction, you know, heroin and prescription opiates, that's being tied to marijuana by the administration. Sean Spicer's comments just the other day, we shouldn't be talking about this when there's an opiate epidemic. The same exact markers that defined the swing of the pendulum from the rapid increase in support for marijuana in the 1970s to the extreme blowback that occurred in the 1980s, those same markers are right here, right now in front of us. The pendulum is swinging back. Now, I know people say, well, it's a tipping point, it's too big, it's making too much money, it's too popular, medical marijuana's got 93% support, legalization 60% support, yada, yada, yada. I'm not saying that the pendulum is going to swing all the way back to Richard Nixon and the war on drugs. But when it comes to public policy that impacts social and culture wars, there tends to be kind of a two-step forward, one-step back, two-step forward, one-step back. The pendulum swings far to progress and then a little bit back to retrograde and then a little farther to progress and so forth. And I think that's what we're going to see here. We're going to see a pendulum swing back on recreational, but not all the way back to medical marijuana's Cheech and Chong medicine of General Barry McCaffrey. Okay, but we are going to see a restriction, and that restriction is going to come on the recreational side. And it's going to be really tough for the patients in Washington state because now they don't have a separate medical program. They have just a marijuana program, and that's recreational. Now, some stores can get medical endorsements, but it's a recreational program that has a medical addition to it. So I think that would be in the crosshairs of Jeff Sessions and the Department of Justice. Oregon's looking to merge their programs as well. California's already got it on the burner as far as getting the new Prop 64. It's based mostly on the old MRCRSA, or the current MRCRSA, we should say. We've got legislators in Arkansas and North Dakota that are moving to restrict their medical to avoid giving people any rights to home grow, to start to not let them have access to whole plant in some other medical marijuana states. We've got the states of Maine and Massachusetts dragging their heels on moving forward with commercial regulations. In my mind, I think that they're just hoping that if they delay long enough, Sessions Department of Justice will make it a moot point and they won't have to do any regulation because there won't be any commercial program. And it's going to be incumbent upon us to really bear down and to fight for our rights and to start to understand that it is a fight for rights, that it's a civil liberties question. We've kind of been resting on our laurels a bit, gotten a little complacent because of the way things have been going, because it's been going so well, because Obama kind of kept a hands-off attitude and let us move forward. But for too long, we've been basing our arguments on things like, it's going to raise so much tax revenue for the schools. We're going to make so much money on it. So if something doesn't make a lot of money, then we should bust people for pot. Whether or not we bust people for pot shouldn't be incumbent on whether or not we can make money on it. Even if we lose money not busting people for pot, we shouldn't bust people for pot. It's just a matter of rights, not a matter of cost-benefit analysis. We have so many of our arguments that are based on, oh, we're going to save time for the cops. The cops will have more time to solve other crimes. Okay, that might be true, except that most of the time that cops are busting people for weed, it's during the course of their regular job. They're already out there on the streets, already patrolling and doing work. Now, if they don't have to get out of their car and shake someone down and arrest them and take them down to the station and do a bunch of paperwork and show up to court and get overtime pay for it, for the marijuana bus, then yeah, that time then becomes some time that they can use for other policing duties. But I'm wary of this argument because it could easily be shot down if crime goes up. Now, so far it hasn't. Crime's generally been going down, but what if for factors we can't control, factors that have nothing to do with marijuana, there's a crime wave? Then our opponents will say, ah, see, you said legalizing marijuana would save more time for cops to be able to bust crime, but see, there's more crime, so obviously the cops aren't being able to bust it, and that more crime has come about because we legalized weed, because weed is evil and criminal. Then we have to have that. We get people that'll make the argument for marijuana legalization because drug dealers don't check ID, which is a good argument. I like the argument. But as soon as we start getting cases of kids getting busted with weed that they got because an older brother bought it at the dispensary, or they got because a dispensary clerk didn't check the ID, it starts to weaken that argument too. And I'm not saying don't use these arguments. I'm just saying be aware that they have flaws. All arguments have flaws. I was taught in debate, you should be able to argue the opposite side just as well as you argue your own. And so I'm just pointing out some of the ways that these things can be shot down. But the one argument that is immune to those kind of flaws, the argument that's immune to the price of marijuana, the amount of tax that's received, how much crime there is, whether or not people are addicted, the argument that cannot be punctured is that it's my civil right. You have no authority to tell me what to do with my body, as long as I'm not hurting anyone else. Now, it depends where you're at if you want to make this argument, but when I'm in blue states, I often like to say, my body, my choice. I like to use the line from the pro-choice crowd, right? If a woman's got a right to do with her uterus what she chooses, why do I not have the right to do with my lungs what I choose? Can't make that argument as well in a red state with pro-life people. They're all for controlling people's bodies. All right, we got to take a break, and when we come back, we'll have our last segment of the week. We'll get you prepared for next week, give a look forward to some of the events that are coming up, and more. Thanks for listening. I'm Radical Russ. We'll be back right after this.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com. You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
THC levels in marijuana snacks are so high, they could kill children and pets.
Okay, maybe you're high, too. Warning, hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that.
Is this right?
Just try not to drool quite so much on the end of it.
A public service message from the Russ Belville Show. Remember, friends, there's more to life than marijuana. I just can't remember what it is. Why'd I come in here? You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. Almost 53 after the hour, and we're winding things up. Here, want a joint? This is if those of you watching, this is a hemp stock. This is a stock from a hemp plant, or a cannabis plant, whatever. And made by my friend LK. Rest in peace, LK. Little handle there. Beaded kind of a handle on the end. It's about, about 16 inches long. It's great when you're in a big old party situation. You need to pass a joint to someone. You get that extra reach with it, right? Get all the way back here. That's one of the things I love about our community, man. We are some creative MFers, aren't we? Artistic, creative MFers. Speaking of artistic and creative MFers, shout out to Cliff Maynard. Just thinking of this because I was talking about hemp stocks and stuff and joints. But we have this poster that Cliff made. It sits in out here in Delta 9 Studios, and it's a picture of a hand holding a cannabis leaf, and the background is like the American flag and the Space Needle and a bunch of stuff, right? And only when you get real close to it do you recognize that it's made out of roach papers. Like little scrap, seriously, little torn off bits of roach paper, and he'll collect the ones that are deeply resonated, you know, dark brown, dark black resonated ones, and collect the ones that are, you know, not even yet, you know, smoke, they're white, and every color in between. And you know how, like, they do those mosaics where they take the different colored tiles and they'll make a picture? That's what he does. He takes little scraps of roach paper, seriously, and makes the most beautiful art out of it. It's amazing. So the guy's name is Cliff Maynard. And I think his website is roachpaperart.com. I might be wrong on that. If you look up Cliff Maynard Roach Paper Art, you'll probably find it. But I think it's roachpaperart.com. Just a shout out to Cliff because it's amazing art. I love it. Every time I see it, it's just like, it makes me so proud of our community and how cool and how artistic so many of us are. I wish that was something we could do when it comes to drugs and drug use, right? Like, well, for example, in the abortion discussion, right? One of the things that I often like to say is, well, if abortion is such a terrible thing, volunteer your womb for a fetus transplant. Now, I know they're not possible yet, right? But would you? Right? You think that woman should be forced to give a baby? That baby shouldn't die? But volunteer your womb for it? Oh, you don't want to carry a baby against your will either, do you? Oh, okay. Right? So I often make that argument in the abortion debate. So a similar argument in the marijuana debate is, oh, you think marijuana ought to be prohibited. You think people ought to be locked up for smoking pot. You think the pot's a bad thing and only bad people use marijuana. And it's a terrible influence that leads straight to heroin and degradation and debauchery, right? You think pot's awful? Okay. But you don't get to watch any more movies or TV shows written by people who smoke pot. You don't get to watch any of them that are acted in by people who smoke pot. You got to go through your entire album, CD, and MP3 collection and give away or delete all of the music created by people who smoke pot, right? Because their evil pot influence, well, obviously it's a part of their art, right? It's going to be a part of their work. Right? Right? I'd love to see that. I would love to see some of these politicians have to give up all their classic rock albums, all their rap albums, all their hip-hop albums, with the exception of Gene Simmons' solo album. That's like the only rocker I could think of off the top of my head. Gene Simmons from Kiss. And shit, I can't even name a rapper who don't smoke weed. I'm going way back even into the old school, man. I can't even think of anybody in hip-hop who I can guarantee doesn't smoke weed. Hell, you'd have to get rid of a lot of your country albums. Get rid of your Willie Nelson, your Waylon Jennings, your Merle Haggard. Forget it. Those are gone. Kris Kristofferson, Johnny Cash, no more. I would love that law. Wouldn't that be a great law? The Drug Using Artist Act of 2017. Henceforth, any person declaring a public opposition to the legalization of drugs may no longer enjoy entertainment created by those who use them. So mote it be. It's not possible, I know, but something to think about. And the other thing to think about, I'll leave you with this. Challenge people on the idea that alcohol is a drug. People will give lip service to it, but really challenge it, right? The next time someone tells you something about marijuana smokers, some stereotype about pot smokers, challenge them with a similar stereotype about drinkers. When someone tells you that marijuana smokers ought to be banned or ought to be have this restriction or that restriction, ask them if they'd support the same restriction for alcohol. Part of our fight going forward is to move this battle from how much marijuana tax money can make, how many people medical marijuana can heal, how hemp can save the planet. All great benefits, all great side effects. But the real fight is this is a civil rights battle, and we deserve to be treated the same as beer drinkers and cigar smokers, period. That's all the time we got this week. Thanks for joining us here on YouTube for the Russ Bell Bell Show, now that we're on video. Thanks for your patience as I work out all the technical angles of things. It is a one-man show, so I do everything I can. For everyone here at Delta 9 Studios, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us, and until next time, take care of each other, pokers. Bye.
This is the Russ Bellville Show. The Russ Bellville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Bellville Show.
Marijuana is probably the most dangerous drug.
Okay, well, maybe you're high, too.